Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network. Since 2009, HRN podcasts have been exploring the wide world of food, beverage, and agriculture. Learn more at heritageradionetwork.org. I'm Lou Bank.
I'm Chopity One.
And this is Agave Road Trip, the critically acclaimed award-winning podcast that helps Great Gags bartenders better understand agave, agave spirits, rural Mexico, and bats.
And bacanora sometimes.
And bacanora sometimes. We never talk about the, you know, we get angry hate mail because we don't talk about bacanora enough.
And then when we talk about it, we mess it up and we get even more angry hate mail.
Well, but I think, you know, that feels like it's actually part of the purpose of our podcast is to illustrate the fact that it's so easy to get stuff wrong when you're talking about agave, agave spirits, and rural Mexico, because so much of it is so diverse depending on where you are and what you're looking at, and you think that you're looking at something that stands for everything, and it turns out it doesn't, and maybe something gets lost in translation, and.
And it's a mess. But I think today we do have, we had the chance to talk with scientists. So maybe this is the one in which we have higher quality information in some capacity.
Oh, the quotes are always great. We just screw it up. But you know, I want to be explicit about this, right? The reason that who did we talk with? Valeria, what's her last name?
Valeria Cañedo, which is a vicepresidenta from Colectivo Sonora Silvestre and the Centro de Colaboración para la Ciencia y la Cultura, SCC, Sociedad Civil.
Okay, we're going to put links to those organizations on the webpage because I know I couldn't follow anything you just said. But basically, she works with two NGOs that are about conservation and education.
Correct. Yeah. And she has been specializing in the state of Sonora. That's why the name is Sonora, Wild Sonora, and working with a lot of the bacanora producers and even collaborating with trying to reframe the DO for bacanora to add simple things like the fact that they could use other agaves to make the bacanora and not end up with monoculture of Angustifolia Pacifica.
Right. Which is, it's kind of fascinating. She was talking about her friendship with the folks who run the regulatory body there in trying to make these changes, which is nice, right? It's like they're having conversations, and while they may disagree, they're having conversations about the disagreement to try to get to something better.
Yeah, and I think that something else that caught my eye is that it's still an extremely young scene in terms of the international or national recognition to their spirits. So they are in a unique opportunity of working almost with a blank slate, right? They're just like starting to try to figure out which are the regulations and the lack of regulations that will better serve the producers that they have right now and the ecosystem that they're working with.
Wait, are they?
Well, yes, and I think that
they have an explicit, like, they have the regulations, they have the DO, and it is defined. This would literally be changing the written definition of bacanora.
Yeah, but and at the same time, like, I think she was talking about changing the DO. And I think that she has a lot of very interesting specific ideas that I wouldn't say are innovative in terms of what we've seen in other places. And I think those kind of things can only happen in a place that is just starting. And I think this is actually a great moment for her quote, because I think some people will be slightly shocked at the percentage she's talking about. So why don't we have her quote right away?
Sure. Oh,
sorry, Lou. That, I thought we were going to run another quote. That's definitely not the quote we're running from her. We're running the other quote talking about something still very interesting. So let's have it.
So we have in Alamos, which is a town there located, we have the second biggest maternity caves for the lesser low-nose bat. So that's why it's so important to work in Alamos. And they have the denomination of origin, and it's a small town. Here is actually a pueblo mágico. So there's a lot of tourism there. There's like, so that's the reasons why we're working there. In Matape, we have a cave. We don't know exactly what bats are there, but we know there's caves. There's ones close, but a bat can fly up to 100 kilometers per night looking for food. So what we want is, like, when we started working with agave propagation for conservation, we planted these agaves around 50 kilometers around caves, transition and maturity caves. So for them to not waste that much energy, because I don't know if you know, but the lesser low-nose bat, the ones that migrate are the females. They migrate to mate in south of Mexico. When they come back, they're pregnant or they're lactating. So they need to save all this energy for their puppies too.
Well, I think this is fascinating because sometimes we talk about feeding the bats and we don't necessarily understand the struggles that they're going through.
Yeah.
And I thought, well, like, I don't know if this gave you a more precise, more physical image of why these quiotes are so critical.
Well, sort of, you know, yes. You know, it's interesting. Like, it's not the quote that I would have picked, but, you know, I thought it was a beautiful quote. But, you know, the thing that I'm fascinated by is the fact that if I understand correctly, you've got basically party town down in places like Hidalgo, where you've got the boy bats hanging out and they just stay there all year long. And then the lady bats, they like migrate. They're up in Texas, and then they find this very specific migratory path to come down and visit the boys and get their business out. And in order to make it down to the boys, they've got to have all the little, like when you and I are on our road trips, right? We got to stop and get our snacks. You need those donuts you get in the morning.
Yeah, but we're not pregnant.
Not yet. We got to get down to where the boys are, Java. And so then if they don't actually have enough truck stops on the way down, the truck stops being the quiotes that are flowering and giving them the energy to continue on their mission, if they don't get them, they don't get down there, they don't get preggers, they don't go back up and have pups.
Yeah, but it's, for me, it's... I think what I love about what she's saying is that one thing is going down and you're okay, your body is like in the same way that you had it all the time. When you're coming up, you are carrying a whole different sets of thing on you. So you're tremendously more fragile. And I think that's...
Kind of like when our friends who get pregnant and then they start eating funny stuff. They need more of the funny stuff.
Exactly. Also, it's not enough. You need your pizzas and your hamburgers and your seafood. You need serious stuffs on the way back.
Yeah. So, huh. But okay, so how do the caves tie into that? I guess they also, like, you eat and then you're so full and you got this baby in you, you want to kind of rest in the cave?
Well, yeah, they need a home. Yeah, they need a place to stay.
It's like a motel, really.
Well, no, it's like an upscale motel. How about that?
So all of this, right? In order for the lady bats to come down and meet the boys, they need the food on the way down, and then they really need the food on the way back to make it back to their home, right?
And I think one question that I had always had is, so how many quiotes do they need? Right?
Okay, like, sure.
That's how I got confused with the other quote, whatever. But it's like, okay, you have a certain amount of bats that travel.
Yeah.
And they need a certain amount of food.
Right.
So me, if I were to plant agaves, what would be a responsible number of coyotes to live in my agave field to sustain these bats?
It's an excellent question. It also, I think, begs the question of when you leave the coyote to go to seed, to go to flower, and then to go to seed, how many of them do you let go to seed in order to restore the population of agave for the future?
Well, and that's the beauty of nature, Lou. Things make sense in a holistic way. So it was interesting to talk to her because we've heard different versions of this percentage of agaves that should go to seed or that people get recommended to go to seed. There's some savages that go 20%. Well, I love Sergio from Ultramundo because he goes 20%. He lets 20% go to flowers. And then there's some people that will recommend 5%, but she's saying 1%.
Right, right.
And that
what, Chava?
Well, that sounds like not a tremendous sacrifice.
Oh.
If you're planting... commercially speaking, I don't make a living out of planting agave, so maybe 1% is your margin, I don't know. But 1% sounds like something that doesn't sound outrageous to us from a business standpoint.
Okay,
no?
So I'm gonna push back against that. Not to say that it's outrageous and you shouldn't do it, right? But rather to say 1% actually is a lot when you're talking about the cost of the wholesale product that's used to make the sugar source that's used to make the spirit. In other words, that 1% becomes magnified by the time you've cooked it, you've fermented it, you've distilled it, you put it into bottles, you ship it. In essence, you're increasing your base cost just of an ingredient by 1%, but that becomes something like 5, 10, maybe even 15% of your total costs down the road based on the cost of the full chain. And I say this, you know, and I don't want to divert too far from the actual conversation, but I say this to say, you know, think about our friends at 1% for the Planet, right?
Yeah, I think that's slightly, we could discuss about this later on. I would love to see the Excel sheet where you try to justify this. I think might be slightly distinct in the case of the economics of agave that goes planted. Mostly given that, specifically in Sonora, to my understanding, the land is not necessarily super expensive, and this is a low maintenance crop. So you know, the investment of someone caring for the agave is not tremendous. But what calls my attention,
I think that's a conversation for us to have with one of the mescaleros or Bacaneros up there, but I really do believe 1% is a lot. I'm not saying that they shouldn't do it by any stretch of the imagination. I think, in fact, the cost of not doing it is far greater because you can't afford to lose these bats. But I think 1% is actually a lot, and 5% is a lot, and 20% is a lot.
And if I think about, you know, like we drive around all the time, Jalisco, Michoacán, whatnot, and it's 35 plants per hectare. Given the density that she told us, like 3,500 plants per hectare. Mm-hmm. So you're letting 35 go to have their coyote and seed. Yeah. And I don't think that we've ever seen 35 plants in 100 by 100 meter plot of land having coyotes in most of our drives.
God,
at least that's purposely planted.
Yeah, no, that's a really good point. That would be a beautiful thing to see on, like, that would cause us to slam,
to
well, cause me to slam on the brace and you to swear at me, but yeah.
So, it's
Roy's gonna
love
making the sound effect for that one, by the way.
Oh, Lord. But anyway, so I think that it's a really interesting proposition. I think it's great work that they're doing, and I think that it also makes it accessible. Is that the word, maybe? That I think that if you are somebody that has a killer mezcal project, or if you are a bartender or a restaurant owner that have a close enough relationship with a brand, in order to ask them or maybe push them to have better practices and stuff. I think that there's so many other things that maybe take more years of research, more money, more, you know, like have other complexities. But I think it's such an, I mean, again, like it may cost money. It may cost a lot of money, not that much money, I don't know. But at least in terms of technical complexity, it's just leaving 35 plants go to Kukyote. Like I think there's a beauty to how easy it is to do such an incredible change in sustaining bats.
You know, it's interesting. You and I, in the first two versions of this episode, we had another conversation that I thought you asked a question that I thought was really pertinent, which is how do we know if the 1% is enough, if those 35 plants will be sufficient to feed all of the lady bats who are flying through on the way down and the way back up? And I think that's a fascinating question. And it's one that, you know, you can't really answer until you have enough of these quiotes growing and you're actually monitoring the bat population. But it also brings my head back around to the entire purpose. Well, I shouldn't say the entire purpose, but for me, the underlying purpose of this episode, which is talk about this campaign that's going on right now, participated in by Valeria and a bunch of other organizations. And we'll list all the organizations like Borderlands Restoration Network, list them all on the webpage, but that's being spearheaded by Bat Conservation International, that We Belong Together campaign.
Love it. And can people donate money to them?
They can and they should.
Okay.
So the purpose of the campaign, and Bat Conservation International has been around for a long time. And they do a lot of work to preserve bats all over the world. But this is very specifically a campaign called the Agave Restoration Initiative. Well, I guess the program's the Agave Restoration Initiative. The campaign is called We Belong Together because bats and agave belong together. And what they're trying to do is plant 300,000 agaves on 50,000 acres of land and establish 20 greenhouses and support 50 communities by 2025 that, in essence, becomes exactly that food way, if you will, that we were describing, that allow the lady bats to go see the boy bats and then get their way back home because, you know, they've seen enough of the boy bats.
Love it. So, yeah, I feel like go there, donate some of your money, buy mezcal that it's some way linked to these practices in the future in 2025. And that's
the Bacanora one. You can see, like, there are Bacanoras that actually are part of it. But, you know, I'll tell you, the conversation that I started having with Dr. Kristen Lear over at Bat Conservation International when they were describing this problem is they've got a real need for some of these quiotes in Hidalgo, where the, you know, we're boy town, basically, where all the boy bats hang out. So the conversation that we've been having, and it's not finalized yet, so this is definitely, you know, me speaking out of turn, which doesn't surprise you, does it, Chava?
No. Okay. Very on brand for you.
There you go. So what we're talking about is having Sacred pay the tinacaleros, the families who are making pulque, to literally, in essence, pay for pulque they don't make. So to go back to that conversation, right, about what's the cost of that 1% of the agave, right? Mm-hmm. Like, I don't know what that is, but I'm willing to bet that the, like, Rogelio and the other guys that we met in Hidalgo who make pulque, that they have some sense of how much pulque they get out of one agave during its lifetime production of agua miel, right?
Yeah.
And so what is the income that they would make from that underwrites their entire operation? And then like, that's what we would pay for to let them, to allow them to allow that agave to instead go to seed and create that food source for the bats.
Love it.
Well, it's an amazing theory. We don't know the numbers yet, but that's how I think Sacred's going to try to participate in this, because I really love, you know, I love what they've put together with this campaign. I'd love to see people donate to it. I'll certainly be donating to it personally, but I'd also love if we can somehow tie Sacred into it.
Woo-hoo. And I think that's a wrap, Señor Luke.
It's got to be. We're at 18 and a half minutes.
Oh, good Lord. Okay, let's get the hell out of here. Thanks, guys. Adios.
Catch you next episode.
Bye-bye.
This has been Agave Road Trip, the podcast that helps gringo bartenders learn about agave spirits. Your hosts are Lou Bank and Chava Periban. Sound engineering by Roy Sierra. Theme song performed by Gabriel Oliveira and Mark Rico. Sign up to become a road tripper and listen to more episodes at agaveroadtrip.com. If you enjoyed this podcast, please let us know. And if you hated it, recommend it to your enemies. You can also find us on Facebook and Instagram. Lou is in charge of our social media, so if he happens to sound like an old man, forgive him. He is one. Agave Road Trip is a production of 10 Angry Pit Bulls, Inc.
Agave Road Trip is powered by Simplecast. Thank you for listening to Heritage Radio Network. Heritage Radio Network is food radio supported by you. For our freshest content, subscribe to our newsletter. To subscribe to the Heritage Radio Network newsletter, enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with Heritage Radio Network on Instagram and Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can also find Heritage Radio Network at facebook.com/heritageradionetwork. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. Heritage Radio Network couldn't do that without support from listeners like you. Become a part of the food world's most innovative community today. Subscribe to the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join the Heritage Radio Network family by becoming a member. To become a member of the Heritage Radio Network, click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Heritage Radio Network can become addictive. Programming you hear on Heritage Radio Network can drive you to eat, drink, and listen to more programming on Heritage Radio Network. If it drives you to drink, please do not drink and drive. Drink responsibly, eat responsibly too, and listen to Heritage Radio Network responsibly. To listen to Heritage Radio Network responsibly, wear protective earbuds. While wearing protective earbuds, do not drive or walk. Sit in a comfortable chair. If that comfortable chair has a hard seat, please remember to get up and stretch every 30 minutes. If you get up and stretch every 30 minutes, do not stretch beyond your abilities. Stay within your defined stretching capacity and consult a doctor who specializes in stretching. If you do not have a doctor, listen to all the shows on the Heritage Radio Network. There has to be at least one doctor among the Heritage Radio Network podcast hosts. Thanks for listening. Agave Road Trip out.
Hi, listeners. We want to tell you about a podcast we're really digging. It's called Christopher Kimball's Milk Street Radio. Every week, they travel the world to find the most fascinating stories about food, including children who harvest cod tongues after school in Norway, and a detective who tracks down food thieves. And on Milk Street Radio, you can always find the unexpected. The comedian who ranks apples using an elaborate 100-point system, the secret history of grocery stores, and how to eat your way through Italy. They also interview the most beloved names in food like Jacques Pepin, Sola Awaili, Jose Andres, Jet Tila, Ina Garten, Nigella Lawson, and Padma Lakshmi. Plus, co-hosts Christopher Kimball and Sarah Moulton do live calls with listeners and answer their questions about ingredients, techniques, and culinary mysteries. Like, why roasting a leg of lamb made one caller's oven explode? Ever wonder why your bread won't rise or your souffle falls flat? Chris and Sarah have the answers. You'll also hear from a rotating cast of contributors, including Kenji Lopez-Alt, Cheryl Day, Dan Pashman from The Sporkful, and Alex Inouz, a French guy cooking from YouTube. Take a listen at 177milkstreet.com/radio or just search your podcast app for Milk Street Radio.